Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everybody. I am John Minigan. I am the writer of today's episode. And you are listening to Gather by the Ghostlight.
All right, greetings and good day. This is Gather by the Ghostlight, original stories for radio theater. I'm Jonathan Cook, your host, producer, and sometimes voice actor on this thing. And welcome back. Or if this is your first time listening, then welcome aboard. I know it's been a month or so since we wrapped up season three, but here we are today with this first episode launching season four. That's right. This is the fourth year of this podcast. And you guys are amazing. You know, I greatly appreciate you being here and tuning in, you know, newcomers and longtime listeners alike. And for the newcomers listening who may not know exactly what you're getting into, this is a podcast of audio plays written by established and emerging playwrights from around the world. So most of the plays you're going to hear were originally written as stage plays, you know, many of them being award winners with hefty production histories, and others being brand new plays where you're going to hear the world premiere right here on this podcast. And today we're going to launch season four with a romantic comedy written by playwright John Minigan. His play that you're going to hear today is called A Monogamy of Swans. You are about to meet a young woman named Ellie. After breaking up with her fiancé Jimmy, Ellie has gone to Boston's public garden to kill the swans. But her ex Violet arrives just in time with a better alternative. Now, gather around the ghostlight, sit back and enjoy. This is A Monogamy of Swans, written by John Minigan. And be sure to stick around after the story to hear an interview with this writer.
Come on, you freaking no good. Come on, come on. Ugh, you little bastards, I'm gonna get you, so help me God. Yeah, you keep your distance, you know what's good for you.
Ellie?
Oh, shit.
Ellie, is that you down here?
No, it's not me.
Ellie!
Oh, for Christ's sake, what are you doing here?
I tried your apartment first. I figured you'd probably hear.
How do you figure I'm at the public garden?
Because I saw on Facebook. I figured something was, you know, I figured I'd better drive down here and see what you were doing.
You drove all the way down from Haverhill just to see what I was doing?
Because I saw what you put on Facebook. That's them?
Little bastards.
You shouldn't put on Facebook, you're gonna kill them. What'd you do? Poison the bread?
Don't believe everything you see on the internet, all right? I'm just feeding them.
Why are you feeding them if you're gonna kill them?
That is so like you, you know? Asking questions, because you always gotta have your information. Well, let me tell you something. Life is not just a bunch of questions. Because life was just a bunch of questions, you'd spend all your time asking them, and maybe you'd get an answer, and maybe the answer you get wouldn't be good for anybody, and you'd realize maybe you should have kept your fat mouth shut!
That's a rock.
I know it's a rock.
Are you gonna throw a rock at the swans?
What, you want me to throw it at you?
What have you got against them?
That's another good question. Why don't we ask? Hey, frickin' swans! I'm thinking I might throw this rock and it might hit you, and if I hear would like an explanation for why I would do that. Do you have an explanation, hmm? They got no answer. Filled with secrets. Filled with deception.
I'm sorry about you and Jimmy.
I don't want to talk about Jimmy.
I'm sorry he left.
Oh, yeah. You're probably all broken up about that.
He didn't deserve you.
Is that why you drove all the way down from Haverhill? Because Jimmy didn't deserve me?
I drove down because you put on Facebook are you gonna kill the swans. The best thing I could do this morning would be to go down to the public garden and kill the frickin' swans. Who writes frickin' on Facebook? Do not throw the rock. It wasn't their fault he left. That was an experiment, you going out with Jimmy.
It was not an experiment.
It was an experiment. You tried it and it didn't work out. Now drop the rock.
There, happy? Hey, hands to yourself, all right?
I thought maybe you needed a hug. It didn't mean anything.
You were the experiment, Vi, not Jimmy.
We were together for 2 years and that's an experiment?
Then we broke up. I was all set up to marry Jimmy.
You tried and it didn't work.
Yeah, Jimmy left, then you drive down from Haverhill because you think maybe all of a sudden I'm gonna be, you know.
I drove down because you kill these swans, they're gonna lock you up.
I'm feeding them. See?
You definitely didn't poison the bread.
What kind of person do you think I am?
I don't know, but they're keeping the distance now. You see what you did?
For the reception, my mother was gonna have us put swans on the wedding cake. You know, instead of man and wife. Two swans kissing with their necks making that little heart shape. And she wanted this ice sculpture of swans, only with the bodies all filled up with like honeydew melon.
That's nice.
It's not nice. You know how long an ice sculpture is going to last? You get a swan with a melted neck and a gut full of melon. That's supposed to be romantic. What a stupid woman. What a stupid woman with a stupid idea.
It's because they mate for life.
That's the other internet thing that is completely wrong.
What are you talking about?
Swans, mating for life. Not true.
That's supposed to be like a scientific fact.
Well, the scientists forgot the detail that swans pretty much all look alike. They assumed it was always the same two swans. They screw around like everybody else. Little bastards! Ugh!
Where'd you hear this?
From Jimmy.
Was he... you know.
His upstairs neighbor.
Oh. I met that one. I hate her.
And his downstairs neighbor.
No.
Yeah.
I hate her too.
And that one across the street from him undoes a top when she tans.
At least now you know.
And the counter girl at Dunkin' with the side ponytail.
Huh?
Her mother.
Jesus.
I said we're supposed to get married Thanksgiving. We're supposed to have the swans on the wedding cake. Well, Ellie, you may not be aware of this, but swans, contrary to popular blah, blah, blah. You saw it on the internet.
That's just what they're like.
So he says, you lousy freaking role models!
I mean men, Ellie. It's what they're like. He was an experiment. You tried.
Listen, Vi.
Where's Jimmy right now? He must have seen Facebook, right? He knew what you were gonna do. And where is he? Did he come down here to make sure you didn't do something terrible?
I would have thrown the rock at him.
He would have deserved it. Come here. Sit down.
Fine.
You said you thought we shouldn't be together. You met this guy, Jimmy, and you thought maybe things were going to be different. It didn't work out.
Why'd you let me try?
Because I know about us. I know how I feel about you. I figured you'd go ahead, try being with a guy. It's not going to last because I know how you feel about me.
I don't think you and me...
These swans? I looked them up. They're called Romeo and Juliet.
You looked on the internet.
This one's true.
Well, Juliet's lucky there's just the two of them, because Romeo would be flapping around with all the others.
They're both girls.
What are you talking about?
Seriously, two girl swans. They've been together like 10 years.
How do they know this? Swans pretty much all look alike.
They're the same pair.
No kidding. Massachusetts, right?
I don't know about Maine for life, but 10 years? I figure that's pretty good for swans. They know how they feel about each other.
I guess they do.
Hey, give me some of the bread.
I scared them off. They're not gonna...
Just give me some. Swans, come here. Swanny swans. Come here. You want some bread? Swans. Come here.
You're telling me you drove all the way down from Haverhill just so I wouldn't do something stupid?
Yeah, I did. Look. They're coming in. My turn to feed them.
Maybe you better not give him that bread.
Why not? No. You didn't really...
poison the bread.
Did you?
Of course I didn't.
I should hope not. Here they are.
Hey, look at that.
Like a little heart-shaped with their necks.
I didn't think they really did that.
I guess they know how they feel about each other.
I guess they do.
That was A Monogamy of Swans, written by John Minigan. It was performed by Devin McSherry as Ellie and Shelby Lauren Smith as Violet.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right. So with me now is the writer of the story you just heard. He was the winner of the 2020 New American Voices Festival, the winner of the 2019 Clowder Competition, and he's been a finalist in many well-established playwriting festivals all over the place. Ladies and gentlemen, this is John Minigan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Jonathan. Thank you for having me here.
And so this is your second time on the podcast. Last year, we did your play Closing Doors.
Right.
And now you are back with your other play, A Monogamy of Swans. And I'm kind of doing something that I haven't done before. We have another guest here. It's one of the actresses that performed in A Monogamy of Swans. And she was also in Closing Doors, coincidentally. This is Devin McSherry. How you doing?
No, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. So last time you were here, we already went into your background and how you were a teacher, or you still are a teacher, right?
I am. I'm sort of teaching teachers at this point, working with student teachers.
And today I just kind of want to dive right into this play that everyone just heard, A Monogamy of Swans. And before we get too far into it, there's something in the script that one of the characters mentions. Now, I'm not from Boston. I don't really know much about the Boston area, but Violet mentions the two swans at the Boston Public Garden, Romeo and Juliet, two girl swans that have been together for over 10 years. Now, when I first read this in the script, I thought, that's a nice little creative writing on John Minigan's part. That's a nice little story element. But doing some research, that's a real thing. And at the time that you wrote this, they had been, people had noticed them together, these two girl swans, for over 10 years. And and the way you incorporated that and how it parallels kind of the relationship that Ellie and Violet have, and the whole theme of, you know, we know how we feel about each other. That was just such a nice, clever way to include that.
Yeah, it was such a gift, too, in terms of the process, because I had been, this is a play that it, you know, sometimes a 10-minute play happens really quickly. This one did not. This one went through multiple permutations, and it took me like 2 months to get a draft, because the characters kept changing. They were going to be swan researchers at one point, and, you know, eventually they got to where they were, but I didn't really have a way to close the piece. And so I was just noodling around doing research and discovered the story of Romeo and Juliet, the two swans, that they were both girls. And I'm like, oh, of course, there's the ending. There it is. So I feel like they gave me the ending.
That's awesome. So being in Boston, you hadn't really heard about the two swans until you kind of did your own research?
Yeah. When I read it, it struck it rang a bell with me. So it may be something that I had heard years before, early in their relationship together. But it had sort of fallen out of my mind. And then I realized, like, oh, that's who I'm writing about. I'm writing about the the two girls and the lagoon, whether it's Ellie and Vi or whether it's the two swans.
Nice. So as far as the process went from this being an idea to getting it on paper, how did that work for you? When you were getting this play written?
It was initially I was out on a canoe ride with my son and on a pond that's near us, and we saw a swan, and then later we saw a swan and we're like, is that the same swan? Is it a different swan? Like, swans kind of all look alike. Is that why they think that swans are monogamous? Because they all kind of look alike. And I was like, oh, I think there's a play in that. So that was the start of it. And it was originally, as I said, it was going to be two swan researchers who were struggling in their connection together and trying to find the solution through the swans. And then it kept changing and kept changing and kept changing. And the more Boston it became, the clearer the story became to me.
Nice. So, Devin, since you're mm-hmm. here, when you first read the script, when I sent it to you, what was your first impression of it and the character that I asked you to play? When you read through it, what did you think about it?
Reading through it, I thought there was a lot of funny lines and interesting parallels, like you were talking about, between the characters and the swans. And I enjoyed it, and then I started getting worried about the Boston accent.
Yes, the pressure. That was when I first emailed her and Shelby. I was like, okay, now the characters are based in Boston, and I want to stay faithful to that. I know this is a lot of pressure, but could you guys start working on your Boston accents? Yeah. And then both of them sent me videos. They're like, is this good? I was like, you know what? It's convincing enough. We're going to do our best. Yeah. You got a little extra time to work on it before recording day. But yeah, they did such a great job with it. Thank you.
It was a fun challenge for sure. It was a couple of times where I'm like, how do you say experiment with a Boston accent? There's a couple of random words. Like, I never would have thought of how to say that until I had to say it. So hopefully it comes through.
Now, there's another play you wrote. You mentioned it last time you were here, The Queen of Sad Mischance. Now, last year when you mentioned it, I hadn't read it, but I got a chance to read it earlier this week, and it is such a smartly written play. And again, it's another one of those plays that it looks like you did your research with Shakespeare and Queen Margaret and all that. And man, the script alone has won so many awards, and it's been a finalist in so many different festivals. And I think you've had it workshopped at three different theaters. You've had stage readings at two other ones. But from what I understand, you haven't found a home for a world premiere yet. And that is just sad to me, because it is such a great play.
It is very sad to me as well.
So this is for any theater companies out there listening. I just want you to, can you give us the brief rundown of that play? Because I would love to see that play on stage.
Yeah, so would I. First of all, I'll just say it is easy to produce. It's three characters, one setting, nine scenes over the course of an academic year. And it's the story of Kim, who is a really gifted and ambitious biracial college senior at a women's college who envisions for herself a future in academia. She's particularly interested in the image of women in Shakespeare's plays. And she gets a chance to have a year-long research assistantship with Professor Beverly Norton, who is sort of an icon in the field of feminist Shakespeare criticism. But Beverly, the professor, has early onset Alzheimer's. And the struggle becomes for Kim, like, how do we accomplish the task that the scholar is trying to write? She's trying to write a book about Shakespeare's Queen Margaret, and preserve my ambition, as she gets caught up in the machinations of how academia kind of grinds people up, and in particular, how this relationship with her mentor grinds her up. And she ends up making a lot of difficult choices and then a really big choice at the end. Fortunately, in the last 10 days, I have had two full script requests from two different theaters. So once again, I'm hopeful. It was slated to premiere at a theater on the West Coast in April of 2022. They cast two of the three roles, had a director and the crew and, you know, production folks in place, and they couldn't cast the third role. And they said the person that we want is available next April. So we'll postpone it to April 2023. That was the last I heard from them. And they did not do the show.
So any theater companies out there, this is an award-winning script. It's great. Yeah, definitely reach out to John Minigan and or get on the New Play Exchange, which is where I read it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's an awesome script. And you have the Tall Tales of Blackburn Tavern. Now, I've only seen the poster for this, but I saw that it's getting produced in September.
Yes.
And it was actually commissioned by the Gloucester Stage Company.
Yeah.
So tell us about that you got coming up.
Sure. I'm still pinching myself on that one. I love Gloucester Stage Company. It's sort of been a theater that I've wanted to work at. They did a reading of Queen of Sad Mischance. It's one of the theaters that did a reading. And it's the 400th anniversary of the first European settlement in Gloucester. So there's sort of a citywide commemoration of 400 years plus, because of course there were people there before the Europeans arrived. So as part of the year-long celebration, the theater wanted to do something. And so they contacted me based on work that I had done on an adaptation of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow about a year ago, and said, would you be interested in adapting a bunch of Gloucester lore and legends for the stage? And I said, sure. That sounds like a great project. It terrifies me. I don't know how to do it. I don't know any of these legends that you're talking about. So it was a ton of research. And it's been a great process so far. The theater's been super supportive. We had a table read of draft 2 at the end of April, and that was great. It went well, and it gave me a lot of really good actionable notes. So I'm close to the end of draft 3 on that. And it's a lot of fun. It's 4 actors, story theater style. There's some music, there's puppetry, there's projections. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Nice, nice. Okay, so along with that, because you said that's also an adaptation, and you've done quite a few adaptations. So, two-part question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is the pressure like of being commissioned to write a play? Because it's like, so a lot of times it's not that you had the idea. It's like someone came to you, right, and you have to, okay, this is it. So what right, what is being commissioned like for you?
It's terrifying. the previous commission I got, I was commissioned early in the pandemic. Lyric Stage Company of Boston decided that they weren't going to go to Zoom theater, they were going to go to audio theater. So they commissioned a series of playwrights to write walking plays. And the idea is that it's an audio play. You can put your headphones in and stream it and walk the path that the characters are walking in Boston and experience what they experience with, you know, Easter eggs. Like, as you're walking by this thing, they will mention what that thing is, et cetera, et cetera. But the idea was that I would have 2 weeks to write the draft of a 10 to 15 minute play, but I had to use a character from the previous play, which was also being written. So I had to wait until it was done to know what I could write about. Like, I knew the part of it was the Rose Kennedy Greenway, which is from near the coast in Boston, near the waterfront. So I knew the area, but I didn't know who the characters were going to be or what their concerns were going to be. And I had to wait. And I know the night that I got the play before mine, and then my 2 week clock started, I did not sleep a wink that night. I was like, oh my God, they made such a mistake. Why did they ask me to do it? And then of course the next morning when I got up and started to write, it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to sit and write. And yeah, there's already a character here, so I don't have to do that work. It's going to be easier. I just need to continue that story.
Nice. So
it goes from terror to fun, ideally.
So the other part of that question is, so you've done quite a few adaptations. You did a Hamlet, you did like a Noor Hamlet, did Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Right.
So when you're writing an adaptation, obviously you want to put kind of your own spin on things. So mm-hmm. what is your process for that? You know, staying faithful to the source material, but also introducing your own fresh take on it.
What is
the challenge of that? Or how do you go about, what is your process?
Yeah, those two were really, really different. The first was, except for the fact that they were both written for the same actor to play the lead, or The Legend of Sleepy Hollow was a solo show for him. So with Noir Hamlet, it was just, he had suggested at one point, like, could you write a full-length noir comedy? Because he'd been in a short noir comedy of mine. And I kept thinking about it and thinking about it. And yeah, I've taught a lot of Shakespeare. And I said, oh, Hamlet's a detective story. He's trying to figure out who killed his dad and you know, get the goods on the guy and get revenge. And I'm like, oh, that could work as a noir. So then it was just a matter of like playing in the land of noir and making the Hamlet story work in 1949 Los Angeles. With Sleepy Hollow, it was different. And I think the thing for me, I initially said no, that I wasn't going to do it because I couldn't figure out why I wanted to tell that story. And I went back, and the more time I spent with the original Washington Irving story, the more I realized, oh, Washington Irving is, he's like one of the first American authors creating literature for a brand new country. And he's warning us about, like, Rip Van Winkle is about, like, don't fall asleep at the wheel politically, like, know what's going on in terms of leadership. One of the first questions Rip Van Winkle is faced with when he wakes up after 20 years is, who did you vote for? I'm like, wow, that feels really relevant. And I realized that Sleepy Hollow is really about disinformation, about people manipulating the truth to get things that they want. And suddenly it was like, oh, I know what story I want to tell. And I can tell that story using the bones of a Sleepy Hollow story. But it's tricky because it's, you know, that one's narrative. At least Hamlet was already a play. Sleepy Hollow is a narrative. And the most important scene in The Legend of Sleepy Hollow doesn't exist in the original story. It's what actually happens around the campfire with Brom Bones and Katrina Van Tassel and Ichabod Crane. So that became the fun of, like, what is that 20-minute scene that between these three characters? And how do I write it so that one actor is going to perform all three roles?
All right. So, Devin, do you have any questions for Mr. Minigan here?
Yeah, actually. You were talking about how you are a teacher of teachers. So do you have any, like, quick tips for writers? Like, for improv, they say never say no. Is there a quick tip for writing?
Yeah, it's similar. There is kind of a yes and that happens when you're writing as well. And that's giving yourself permission to just write down whatever is coming and not edit it at first. Let the first draft be the first draft. I've recently, a friend, Daniel Ho, who's a playwright, suggested the term spaghetti draft, which I really love. It's like you're throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks.
There you go.
And so I've become really into, like, this is just the spaghetti draft. I don't owe it anything. It's just going to be what comes out. And then there'll be pieces of it probably that I will later realize, like, oh, this is useful. This is going to actually go into a real first draft kind of thing. So that definitely happened with the Gloucester play, with the Tall Tales from Blackburn. Just like, here are all these stories, all these legends and lore. Let me try dramatizing them just to see what happens and what's going to be effective and what's not.
So with that play, since it's, you say it's all different types of lore of, is it sort of like a bunch of short plays that you put together, or is it just one long play?
It's a little bit of both. Their request was that I focus on three specific stories. There is a famous sea serpent that may or may not have existed in Gloucester for many centuries, known as Cassie, the sea serpent. And there were lots and lots of sightings, and some of those sightings led to really interesting events. So that was one. There's an area of Gloucester called Dogtown that is this strange, mysterious place that was inhabited from, like, the 1630s to the 1830s. And nobody lives there anymore. It's just cellar holes and it's overgrown. But there were witches supposedly there. It was a place where people who kind of lived on the outside of society ended up inhabiting after the powerful people kind of moved away. So there were people who had formerly been enslaved. There were people who were unhoused. There were people who today we would call trans, who kind of lived in that area. So that became really interesting, and the lore and legends, especially the supposed witches that lived there. And then the third was this weird thing. While the witch trials were happening in Salem, there was apparently a ghost army that really set their sights on this one guy, Ebenezer Babson, who had multiple encounters with them, weird encounters with these strange creatures that, like, they would shoot them and the creatures would fall down dead, and they'd go to investigate and they'd hop up and run away. So, like, just bizarre stuff. So those are the three main pieces. So in a sense, it's like three separate stories. But the overarching piece is a piece among the four actors who are performing these stories. And one of them is dead set against telling the sea serpent story because it's inherently dangerous, because it's a story that's not over. Cassie the sea serpent could come back at any moment. So that kind of creates an overarching idea.
Nice. All right. And that goes up in September.
Yes, September 1st to 24th at Gloucester Stage Company.
Awesome. Yeah. So other than that, what else do you have coming up, and where can people see your work in a, on a stage in a theater near them?
I have a bunch of short pieces going up in various places, but that Legend of Sleepy Hollow, it's getting its West Coast premiere at 6th Street Theater in Santa Rosa, California in October, and then a regional premiere at Funky Little Theater Company in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So those are happening. And then, you know, fingers crossed that one of those two theaters that just requested Queen of Sadness Chants, one is in Southern California and one is in Florida. So we'll awesome. See.
Yeah. I hope that definitely works out. Let, you know, definitely let me know if they want to do that. I would love to see that play.
Yeah. And there is an audio production that's going to be released next month that Dean Productions in Los Angeles did. So it's an audio version. So similar to working through Monogamy of Swans to figure out how to make it work on an audio basis, had to go back and work through some of the moments in Queen of Sadness Chants to make it work for audio. So, and that was a fun, I was very involved in the rehearsal process and making those changes and so on. So that was fun.
Very cool. All right. So where, to remind us where people can find you so they can know what's going on.
Sure. JohnMinnigan.com is my website, and there are links to stuff that, as it becomes available, that are on that website in the onstage page of that site, as well as some general information. And then my New Play Exchange page has essentially all of my scripts up for downloading and reading and enjoying, and maybe producing.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for letting us produce this play. I know Devin had a lot of fun with it, and Shelby. She's not here, but. But yeah, they both did such a fun job with it, and they had a lot of fun recording it, playing with the accents and all that.
That's great. That's
we
great.
Definitely did, you know, multiple takes to make sure that we got it as convincing as we could.
Yeah. Well, it's funny too, because I grew up in the Boston area, still live in the Boston area, and I spent so much of my youth like getting rid of my Boston accent and avoiding it in my writing and not writing about characters that I grew up with, and I find that I'm finally going kind of back home and thinking about all those folks and incorporating their stories.
All right. Well, Devin, John, thank you for being here. Thank you for, you know, letting us do this play again. And
thank you.
You know, keep creating, keep writing, and definitely if Queen of Sad Mischance goes up somewhere, definitely let us know.
Shall do. Thank you so much, Jonathan and Devin. Thank you both.
Nice talking to you.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you all for listening, and if you are associated with a theater and you would like to produce the play you heard today on your stage, send an email to gatherbytheghostlight@gmail.com or contact the playwright directly at his website, johnminnigan.com. And if you would like some cool Gather by the Ghostlight merchandise, t-shirts are available at the merchandise link in the show notes, along with the Year 1 and Year 2 books, which are also both available at Amazon. This program is supported in part by the Greater Augusta Arts Council through a grant from its partner agency, the National Endowment for the Arts. Intro and outro music, as always, is provided by artist JK47. And if you enjoy this podcast, maybe you're a longtime listener, or maybe this is the first episode you've ever heard, let us know. Please leave us a rating or a review in all the places that you can. And also be sure to follow Gather by the Ghostlight on social media to stay up to date on new episodes. I'm Jonathan Cook, and as always, stay safe, and I'll see you next time we gather by the ghostlights.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.